In this week's Sedra, the Torah speaks about the cities of refuge, where somebody who murders someone unintentionally, not accidentally, but unintentionally, runs to these cities and has to stay there until the Kohen Gadol dies. And if he's in the city, the avenger of the blood, one of the relatives of the victim, can't hurt him, and if not, if that person kills him, he's exempt from punishment. That's just the laws of the cities of refuge. There is a hint to the month of Elul, not in this week's Sedra, but in the Sedra of Mishpatim, where it also speaks about the cities of refuge, and it says, the Asher Lo Tzadah, person did not premeditate the murder. And God brought it to his hand. I'll give you a place to run away to. In other words, the cities of refuge. In that pasuk, the words ino liyado, aleph nun hey, ino liyado, v'samti loch, the first letters of those words spell Elul. So there's some hint to the month of Elul in the ideas of the cities of refuge. So I want to explain what that is and to expand upon it. That which a person, the Torah says that when a person kills unintentionally, basically it's called negligent homicide. He was negligent, and because he was negligent, somebody was killed. So I didn't kill them on purpose, but I killed them because I wasn't thinking. I wasn't paying attention. Okay? So that the Torah describes as Belidas. I wasn't thinking, wasn't paying attention, and because of that, I was negligent, and somebody died. And even premeditated murder, usually murders happen because people lose their cool, they get angry, and then they're not thinking. So the truth is that the source of murder, whether it's on purpose or unintentional, is because people don't think. Either they lose their thought process because of anger, or because they're just not paying attention, they're just not thinking. And therefore, the cure, the tikkun, the correction of that situation, that you ended up killing somebody because you weren't thinking, you weren't paying attention, either because you got angry, or because you stopped, weren't paying attention, and were negligent. So what do? We, neither connected, neither, put you into the hands of the avenger of the blood, who also doesn't function with reason, but because he functions by impulse. Because he's upset because his relative was killed. And you're going to have to be very attentive to know where you are, if you're safe or you're not safe. So you're going to have to watch every step to make sure that you don't go out of the city of refuge. So in that way, we give you what you gave. You killed somebody because you weren't thinking, and now you're in the hands and the mercy of somebody who may kill you because he's not thinking. And you're going to have to think and pay attention to where you are. Otherwise, if you stray from that city, you could be killed. Now, this idea of the cities of refuge is not just that they fulfill this purpose of being a place of refuge for these murderers. But the actual existence of these cities helps to prevent, it's a preventative measure also, it helps to prevent people from coming to a situation where they will kill people either out of passion and stop thinking for a few minutes because of their anger, or because of negligence and not paying attention and not thinking to begin with. How do I know that? Because it says that there were 6 main cities of refuge, and then there were 42 more, which were the cities where the Levium lived, and they also served the cities of refuge. So there were a total of 48. But the main ones were the 6, 3 in Eretz Yisrael proper, and 3 in Transjordan, on the other side of the Yarden. And the Gemara says that until all 6 were separated and designated, none of them had any effect. That's only when all six were designated. So it says that Moshe Rabbeinu separated the first three because he never crossed the Jordan. So he separated the three on the other side of the Jordan, not in Eretz Yisrael proper. Why? Because we learn from there, Zrizim Akdim LeMitzvahs. But if you have a mitzvah, do it. Even though Moshe knew that it wouldn't be effective until the other three were separated, still he jumped to do what he could do. Now, if the whole purpose of these cities is to be a refuge, then he didn't do anything. He didn't accomplish anything. Separating those three cities was really meaningless. They didn't have any effect. But if the idea is that just having these cities make people think, right, these are the cities of the Levium, so they counteracted people functioning without thought. You were inspired by these cities to know that you have to think and pay attention to what you do, because you could come to kill somebody if you don't pay attention, or if you lose your cool. So the existence of the cities themselves, even though they didn't yet have their full power of refuge, but they did accomplish something by being there. Okay, and the idea being that the Levium are the ones that live a very intensely thoughtful life. Everything they do is not just done by habit, but a person's a Levi is somebody who separates himself from all the mundane ideas of this world and concentrates on serving the Rabbanu Shlom constantly. That's a Levi. So the cities of Levium are the cities of thought, okay? And it says that he stays there till the Kohen Gadol dies. The Kohen Gadol, it says by the Kohen Gadol, Sipsei Kohen Yishmeru Das. Das, that idea of thinking, paying attention, right, is specifically the Midah of the Kohen Gadol. And it could be that's why there are 48 cities total. Because there were 48 prophets that exhorted and led the Jewish people. And that's the purpose of a prophet, to make you think, to show you the way. That's why it says we're not allowed to, this week's Sedra, you're not allowed to look into the future by going to sorcerers or other people like that. But God said, I'll send you a prophet who will be able to guide you even in future things. What's the difference between a sorcerer and a prophet? So simply, the sorcerer gets his power from the negative, evil powers of the world, and the Navi gets his powers from God. But there's a difference, another difference, and that is the sorcerer just tells you what to do or what not to do in the future to protect yourself or whatever, without thought. Just, this is what you do. The Navi is not there just to tell you the future. He's to guide you how to use it properly, to think into it. So the difference between, so the 48 prophets were there to exhort us, guide us, make us think. So the 48 cities of refuge correspond to those 48 prophets. There's also 48 ways here in Iyat, you should be aware of that. 48 ways of acquiring the Torah. And each way is another thing that a person needs to pay attention to and to think into. And there are also 48 words in the Shema and the Ohavta, which are that idea of being constantly aware and paying attention to God, to Torah, to God, whatever, putting the tefillin on your arm and on your doorpost and on your head, right? You're constantly attached and involved with the Rabbanu Shel Olam. So the number 48 has a connection to this idea of paying attention, of being conscious of what you're doing. And therefore, it is the correction of somebody who ended up murdering because he didn't pay attention, because he lost his cool, because he wasn't thinking. And that's why the Gemara says that they needed proportionately more cities of refuge in Transjordan than they needed in Eretz Yisrael proper. Because there were 9.5 tribes in Eretz Yisrael proper. For them, they had 3 cities of refuge of the 6 major ones. And they had 2.5 tribes in Transjordan, and they have the same 3 cities, another 3 cities. So it's not proportionate. So the Gemara says, "Begilad shlichei rotzchim." There were a lot of murderers in Gilad. It was conducive for people to get angry and lose their temper, and therefore you needed more cities, not because you needed the cities to be refuge, because intentional murderers didn't go to these cities. But you needed it to be an influence to prevent people from functioning and losing their cool, losing their temper and not thinking. Okay. And that's why it says that when God will give us more of Eretz Israel, we'll add three more cities. That'll happen when Mashiach comes. When Mashiach comes, you need more cities of refuge. But the idea is, what's going to be when Mashiach comes? U'mola ha'aretz deya es Hashem. The land will be filled with knowledge of God. And the greater the potential for the good is the greater potential for bad. And in the time of Mashiach, there'll be such a great potential for das, for thinking and paying attention, there'll be an equal nisayon of not thinking and not paying attention. So you need another three Arei Niklat to induce you and engender thinking and paying attention. So on a surface level, that's the idea of Elul. Elul is a time, the whole year, we sometimes lapse into habitual conduct and don't think and don't pay attention. We end up doing a lot of things because we're not thinking, because we're not paying attention, because we're believed us. So Elul, the word Elul itself means to spy out. The Asuru es ha'aretz, by the spies in the Targum, the Aramaic is via Alalu es ha'aretz. So to spy out, Elul means to scrutinize, to think. So Elul is a time like Arei Niklat, just like the purpose of the cities of refuge was not just to be a refuge to people who murdered already, but to be a deterrent from people coming to that, to functioning without thinking, to functioning by losing your cool and not functioning with thought, functioning on passion. What's the word I'm looking for? If you do something spontaneously, right? Impulsively. So Elul is the time of year to get back, just like the cities of refuge, to get back to thinking, paying attention, not functioning impulsively and with passion, but rather with thought and intellect. Okay. Now, in order to do that, this week's Sedra gives us another aspect of this idea of thought, of thinking and functioning, not just because that's the way I feel like functioning. The Sedra starts out with Shoftim v'Shotrim titen lecha. You need judges. You need officers to carry out the judgment. And the Torah says that if you want to have a righteous judgment, which has two connotations. One is that you want to judge situations. You have a judge who's judging you. That's reminiscent of the fact that in 30 days, a little less than 30 days, we're going to be judged by God. And we hope that we'll be judged to be tzaddikim, our nishpat, our judgment will come out to be a righteous or a judgment of the righteous. But it also means that you have to judge and execute according to your judgment what you do in this world. You can't just act. You have to do what's tzedek, what's righteous, what's right. How do you know what's right? You have to think into it. You have to come to the truth. And therefore, the Torah says, you can't take bribery, because bribery blinds your eyes from the truth, and it also, it's ma'aver eini chachamim, it blinds the eyes of the wise, and it perverts the words of the righteous. You can't have righteousness and you can't function with wisdom if you are bribed. Now, bribery can be somebody giving you money, or bribery can be a host of tithes, of desires that you have, of negias, of subjectivity. That's also bribery. So a person has to be able to see the world as it really is and judge what to do and to execute that judgment properly. And if you do that, if you want to do that, you have to free yourself of your subjectivity, of your negias, of your desires and whatever, and see things in an objective way. And then you can end up being a tzaddik. A tzaddik is a person who does tzedek, and tzedek is basically related to what's true, what's just, what's true. Now it says on Rosh Hashanah, It's a time of seriousness. It's not a time to be festively joyous, carefree. I've got other yamin togim, but it's a time for serious introspection. That's why we don't say hallel on Rosh Hashanah, because Sifrei Chayim, the Sifrei Meisim Psuchim Lefanav, since the books of the life of the living and the books of the dead are open before God, how can you be, you know, so joyously carefree? So he's bothered me. I understand why the books of the dead will bring me to be somber. Because the books of the living are open, why does that make me somber? Well, the idea is that it's not just that something bad could happen to you, but the fact is that you're being scrutinized. You see that God scrutinizes. Everything is important. Everything is done, has to be done with a purpose, with reason, with thought. You can't just throw your be carefree and throw all caution to the wind. You can't just function by habit. So the fact that God scrutinizes both the living and the dead, good and bad, means that you have to be serious. So it brings to mind this idea of thought and not just functioning by rote, by habit. And that is, we want to be a tzaddik, right? Because that's what Rosh Hashanah is. It's three books. Tzaddikim, Rishayim, and Beinonim, and the Beinonim either end up in one end or the other by Yom Kippur. So what is that? So the Sfas Emes says that tzedek, it says in the Tzedra, tzedek, tzedek tirdof. You should pursue tzedek, righteousness, doubly. Tzedek, tzedek. So the Sfas Emes says the only way that you can pursue righteousness is if you pursue truth, is if you're not subjective. If you don't give in to your passions, your desires, if you're able to be objective. Okay, don't take bribery, even the kind of bribery that you bribe yourself, right? And that's why he points out, or others point out, that there's only another place in the Torah where it speaks about removing yourself extremely from something negative. That's lies, falsehood. Midbar sheker tirchok. And here's the other end of the coin. Tzedek, which is truth. Tzedek tirdof. Just like there, you have to stay away from it in the extreme. Here you have to pursue it in the extreme. Stay away from falsehood in the extreme and seek truth and righteousness in the extreme. Okay? And that's why the Rambam says that tzedek, or being a tzaddik, is being able to admit to the truth. To see things as they really are. Because if you don't think into things, you just see them as you would like them to be, or as you imagine them to be, or you don't think at all. But if you think into things, you see them as they really are. Okay. And therefore, Reb Tzavik says that a person who has no negius, he has no desires for a certain thing, for that thing he's called a tzaddik. That those things that he can free himself from his desires and his subjectivity, in that thing he's a tzaddik. So that's a tzaddik. A tzaddik is a person who sees things as they really are, sees the truth. And therefore the tzedek tzedek, Rabbeinu Bachya says, includes both ideas and actions. All should be based on truth and righteousness. And the Chidah says the double tzedek tzedek is both between man and God and between man and man. And the Ramban says in order to reach that level of tzedek, of righteousness, meaning truth, right, you have to attach yourself to chachamim, to sages, because they'll point out the truth, and to, the Vilna Gaon says, and to follow their advice and their guidance. And that's why it says in the future God will give every tzaddik 310 worlds. Lahanchil ohava yesh. So Reb Tzavik explains the word yesh means that which is substantive. It's there. Yesh. Ein means it's not there. It doesn't really exist. The world of injustice, of evil, is really a fantasy world. It doesn't really exist. Because God created good. Bad is only, we have a choice to do bad. It's only apparent, but it's not real. It's an olam ha-sheker. The word sheker, right? The opposite of emes and evil is sheker. Sheker ain't lo raglayim. There's not a leg to stand on. All the letters of sheker either on one leg or on a point. They're not real. They appear, they're apparent. But the real world is, the good in the world is what's real, is what's eternal. That's why it says that God saw the light, that light which is eternal, the light which was created in the 6 days of creation, which will exist eternally. That's what's really substantive. That's called Tov. And a tzaddik is also called Tov, because he's real. And if you deal with the fantasy world, unreality, then you're not a tzaddik, and you're not seeing the truth. You're seeing what's false. False means it doesn't really exist. It just appears to exist. Right? I once came clearly to this idea that, you know, the Olam HaSheker, there's a world of falsehood out there, but it looks pretty real. You know, since the fall of the Soviet Union, right, which looked real, powerful, and overnight, without a shot being fired, it just dissolved. As it says in the prayers of Rosh Hashanah, the Kol HaRisha Kula Ka'oshin Tikla, eventually all the evil will disappear like smoke. It looks real, but it's not. I once came to this realization of a world that can look real, but it's really not real. When Disneyland, Disney World, opened up in Orlando, I used to live in Miami. So the first Chol HaMoed Pesach that it was open, I took my family there. And it was many, many years ago. And not that I wouldn't go again now, but hey, what's it called? But it was an experience. And I remember they have there the Hall of Presidents. So they have robots, but not just mannequins, robots that move, that sweat, that grimace, that smile, that are talking, moving. They look mamish like real people. All the presidents of the United States are sitting on a dais, and that's called the Hall of Presidents. I remember walking in there with I must have been about 5 years old, one of my sons, and he looks up at these people on the stage and says, Tati, are they real? I said, no, they're just a bunch of dummies. Which was not really the thing to say about the presidents of the United States, because I got a lot of very not nice glares. So I said, no, they're just like, you know, they're just dolls, robots. And I see that he is thinking deeply for the next 5 minutes. And then he looks up to me and says, Tati, is this chair real? Before he sat down, he wasn't sure. If those people aren't real, then I'm not sure anymore what's real. And I'm sure the next question was, are you real? So you can live in a world where what appears to be real is not real. The Rebbe Shem gave Walt Disney the power to create a world of fantasy that looks so real that you can understand that the world out there looks real too, but only that which is righteous is real. And that which is not is only apparent. It only appears. It's just fantasy. That's not what's real. And that's why the Nitziv says that a person who lives a life of tzedek, of righteousness, of truth, it brings a person to life, because life is what's substantive. And the opposite of life, the absence of life, is death. As if you don't have substance to your life, then you're dead. Even if you're functioning, but you're basically living in a world that's not real. And therefore, in order to be a happy person, the more substantive your life is, the more happy you are. And therefore it says, if you pursue righteousness, tzedek tirbo, then you will inherit the land, both Eretz Yisrael and Olam Haba, and you'll live. You'll be a happy person. Because you'll be living in fact, in substance, and not in a fantasy world. And that's why people wake up in midlife and see that their life is meaningless. Right, they're pursuing things that eventually aren't going to have any meaning, and very, very disillusioning. And therefore, what's it called? There's two levels, though, of truth, two levels of substance. There's what Rav Moshe Vali, the Talmud of the Ramchal, says: "Emes Elyon." There's truth in the heavens, right? The upper truth, and then there's the lower truth. And if you pursue the lower truth, you will get the upper truth on you. The tzedek. There's tzedek tachton and tzedek elyon. Now, what I understand this means the following. The tzedek elyon, the upper truth, is the absolute truth. But in this world, you have to adapt the truth to the situation of this world. This world is a temporary world. So it's a world anyway that's not 100% substantive. So therefore, there's relative truth. And truth has to be applied according to the time and the place and the circumstances, right? And if you function according to the relative truth of this world, you'll eventually get the absolute truth of the next world. That the Malbim says. And therefore, there's two kinds of justice. There's justice that's according to the Torah, right? Where if you go to the details of the case, this one said this one said this, right? And according to the details of the case, this is the halacha, this is the truth. But then there's also the melech has a right to overrule that and to say, but in this situation we need something else, right? For instance, the melech has the right, and sometimes the Sanhedrin has that right, to say like this: somebody transgresses Shabbos without witnesses, with a rabbinic prohibition. He rides a horse on Shabbos, but people are desecrating the Shabbos, and if we let that go by, it's going to lead to mass chilul Shabbos. Then the Sanhedrin and surely the king had a right to execute that person, even though the Torah doesn't demand it, in order to preserve the circumstances that exist to preserve the truth, even though that's not the absolute truth. Because absolute truth, you don't execute a person for that. But under the relative truth, that is what's necessary. So there are situations where you can function according to the needs of the time or whatever, and supersede the laws of the Torah to a certain degree, but the Torah sanctions that. Torah says the king has that power. The Sanhedrin, under certain circumstances, has that power. So the power is given by the Torah, but it's not the norm of absolute truth. It's truth that is temporary, according to the needs of the generation, the situation, the hour, or whatever. And therefore, there's another kind of righteousness and truth which comes through compromise. There's strict judgment. You're right, you're wrong. And then there's, in this world where nothing is absolute, so everybody's a little right, a little wrong, or whatever, right? Nothing is exact, and therefore the first thing is trying to make a compromise. And a compromise, everybody benefits, everybody loses too a little bit, but you end up everybody being happy. However, the exception to this is, don't think that the end justifies the means. If you're going to use means that are not true and think with that you're going to come to the truth, it doesn't work. Tzedek tirdof. Righteousness follows other righteousness. But you can't achieve righteousness by doing things that are not righteous. The end doesn't justify the means. Just because the end is right doesn't mean that it's okay to do any way you can get by hook or by crook to get to that end. It has to be proper. The proper can mean not absolute, but based on time, place, compromise, or whatever. But if it's totally not proper, what makes it proper is the end will justify those means, that doesn't work. That was Sham Shofar Herses and Rabbunu Pashisra. And that's why it says tzedek and tzedakah, which is the ultimate tzedek, where you want to give to others, right, what you feel belongs to them, that God gave to you, or whatever, is the foundation of all mitzvahs. Because the foundation of all mitzvahs is truth and reality, right? And the opposite of mitzvahs is the world of fantasy and not reality. And therefore, based on all of this, the Elul has a connection to the cities of refuge. The cities of refuge are a place that makes you think and atone for functioning without thinking, meaning not functioning according to reality, but living for a moment in a world where there's no reality, losing your cool, functioning belidas, without thought. Without thought means that you're not thinking and you're not in touch with the real world. And therefore, what's it called? If you want to be a tzaddik on Rosh Hashanah, and you want to do tzaddik, you have to think. So Elul is like that city of refuge, which gives you the incentive to think. It counteracts people who end up killing unintentionally because they didn't think. or people lost their temper and didn't think and end up killing somebody in their passion, this counteracts that. Elul has the same purpose. So Elul has the same power. It's a month like a city of refuge, which makes you think. You want to come to Rosh Hashanah, you realize God is scrutinizing everything you do, so you have to scrutinize what you do. You want to be a tzaddik, you have to function with tzaddik. Tzaddik means emes, right? So therefore, Elul is the time to get back into the mode of functioning with thought and not just leaving everything to habit and whatever. And if we use Elul that way, and we investigate and scrutinize everything we do, both past, present, and what's going to be for the future, what are we going to take into the new year that's positive, that's real, and what are we going to leave as excess baggage in the last year, leave behind and do tshuva on, right? Then we'll be zocha that when the Rabbanu Shalom scrutinizes us and opens the books of the living, right, that he'll see us as right, fitting for the book of the righteous, and we'll have a ksiva v'chasima tova for ourselves, our families, and for all the Klal Yisrael.
Amen.
Yes. And for all the Klal Yisrael.
Amen.
Yes. And for all the Klal Yisrael.
Amen.